Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people that they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, the Reverend George Johnson Jr., pastor of St. Paul AME Church and recently retired assistant city manager for the city of Waco. Hosting the conversation is Elizabeth Smith, community volunteer and former executive director of Waco's Cooper Foundation. This conversation was recorded June 30th, 2015, in the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Elizabeth Smith, talking today with the Reverend George Johnson Jr., pastor of St. Paul AME Church and retired Waco City Manager. George, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the invite.
Now, you and I go way back. I think I came to know you through your work as an assistant city manager, but I know our churches have done a few things together. At any rate, I'm positive that the junior at the end of your name is important to you. Tell me about growing up.
Certainly. Grew up in Sweet Home, Arkansas. The youngest of five children, four sisters, and me. So junior was very important to my father, which hence became very important to me as well. My father was one of three boys and having one only son, so junior became really important. In fact, my nickname was Junior, so I've been Junior so long until now being called George is almost strange. So,
tell me a little bit more. Tell me about education. Who was a particular influence on your life?
My father, by far, and my mother, my parents. But more specifically, my father and my grandfather both were preachers, and I've come from a heritage of
bivocational.
There you go, bivocational. Ministers. And my father, my grandfather farmed and was a minister. My father, a plumber. And and so I was the first to have the opportunity to go to formal college, go to formal seminary and as a clergy. Sweet Home, about 600 people. And in addition to the large community, we had primarily relatives all around us. We lived in our own property. We grew our own hogs and cows, and we did our own vegetables. So it was a town that was plenty of everybody knowing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Mayberry.
And I think being in a community like that where there are so many people who love and care for you is such a nurturing environment. What about did you feel like there were particular expectations? For example, did you feel like you were expected to go on to college? You were expected to be a preacher, to become a leader?
Not expected to be a preacher, but expected to go to college. That was a dream for our parents. My father had an eighth grade education. My mother had less. And it was their desire for each of their children to have an opportunity to go to school. And they worked hard to afford us that opportunity. All of my sisters finished college, and so did I. And I was a little later than the rest, but I did make it through after 7-8 years.
When do you think you knew what you wanted to do?
Actually, it was in the military. And in fact, I had committed myself to saying that I did not want to be, if you will, a broke preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so I joined the military, had an opportunity to go all over the world, and I worked for chaplains. I think some of the finest people in the world, and certainly in the military. And it was there where I really accepted my calling.
So is it fair to say that was the favorite part of the service for you, was being able to do it within the context of ministry?
Well, I can tell you a little short story about I got in the chaplain's line because the other lines were long. And so in during basic training, and as you're going through the process of being identifying your occupational choice, the other lines were very long, and I said this was a short line, and I got in it. So what was accidental for me was providential, actually.
Right. Well, divine intervention,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what branch of the service were you in?
United States Army.
Okay. And you stayed in for a long time, or how did that work? Your service was a long time.
Yes, I was on active duty for 11 years and had an opportunity to serve in Hawaii, Korea, in Alabama, New York, in Oklahoma, and it was just really an excellent experience for me. Okinawa, Japan. So,
did you see in that context the chaplain as a leader within the service?
Absolutely. Not only did the chaplains have the responsibility of providing moral leadership to the entire, to all of the soldiers, but also to the leaders, to the officers and senior enlisted, and to watch how they interacted and how they would impart their calling. It was just excellent, and it was an excellent experience for me.
Now, you stayed in the reserves, right?
Stayed in the reserves. I came to Waco via Paul Quinn College.
Mm-hmm.
The chaplain, this is just a small world. When I left the military in Oklahoma I was on my way to Perkins School of Theology, Southern Methodist University. There, I left a chaplain who was the post chaplain in Oklahoma. He left and he had gone to Germany. In Germany, he was the staff chaplain in Germany. Came back to Fort Sam Houston as the 5th Army chaplain. So now I'm in Paul Quinn, and he came through one day and he looked me up and he said, "George, it's time for you to pay back the institution that put you through school." And not arguing with chaplain, Lutheran chaplain. He was an ex-boxer and a great guy. He looks like Santa Claus, actually. But I was really my mentor.
Well, that's great. Now, while you were in the reserves, you ended up kind of getting called up for...
Called up, probably one of the most difficult times of my life. And so one of the most difficult decisions, because certainly my commander had given me an option to, because of age and because of family reasons, to not go on the deployment. But I felt it would have been a letdown to the entire unit for me to have trained with them, to have grown with them for several years, and now the time the balloon goes up and I go home. And my family, and suffice to say, prayed through with me, and we made the decision, and it turned out to be an excellent decision. All of the people who had gone to Afghanistan with us, some injured, but all came back home, and I thank God for that.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
Well, I know that your ministry there was really important, and I know it did mean a lot for those guys to have you with them.
Well, it meant a lot for me to be there.
Yeah. Okay, so you pastor an AME congregation.
I do.
Tell us, a lot of people aren't that familiar with AME. Tell us a little bit about the denomination and what it has meant in your life.
Well, it's the only denomination that I've known other than my ecumenical opportunities in the military. Prior to that time, I knew that there were Baptists somewhere, and I knew that there were Catholics somewhere, but I never had an opportunity to fellowship that much with either.
Mm-hmm.
In the military, I had the opportunity to fellowship with everybody, and it was an excellent experience. The African Methodist Episcopal Church started in 1787, so it's not a Johnny-come-lately denomination. It started with some free citizens of African descent who were not able to worship in St. George's Cathedral, and they were on their knees praying, and they were asked to leave, and they left to start a new denomination. Our founding Bishop Richard Allen started the church. And since that time, the first institution for color, educational institution, was started by, which is Wilberforce University, was started by the African Methodist Episcopal Church. The first printing press for people of color was in Nashville, Tennessee, started by the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And there is a relationship now even with the church and with education.
That's wonderful. Servant leadership is a phrase that is or was popular. What do you see as the role of clergy?
First and foremost, always, is to, from my perspective, is to propagate the gospel, to move forward sharing the word that others may know that there is a reality even beyond the reality that we experience every day. And that reality is the Creator and the presence and power of that Creator. It is also to show the presence of the Creator in community. That is, we should not only talk about the Creator, but we ought to be able to move forward in working, and people, regardless of our words, recognize that there is something different about the people who are people of faith. And I guess lastly is that we ought to live that way, that what ought be important ought not be just the things that we've identified in this world, but to really know that there is a presence, a real spiritual presence. And if you were in the Afro-American church, you would hear that I'm of this world, but this world is not my home. So that there is another place, a house not made with hands. And give me an opportunity, I'll start preaching on the radio.
Talk to me a little bit about what you see as an important character trait in a leader. And then kind of the flip side of that is, are there qualities or traits that are sometimes in a leader but that can be dangerous or hazardous? Mm-hmm. Or
I will readily admit that my perspective is somewhat tainted by what I believe and what I know as the core of what I think are the ultimate paradigms. And that is, a leader ought to have, if I were to make it simple, integrity. He or she ought to be able to say what they say and mean what they say and do what they say. I think a leader should also have compassion. And if I were to paraphrase Paul, it would be the fruits of the Spirit. There ought to be the passion and the compassion of love. There ought to be happiness and joy. I just don't think we ought to live this entire life and not have a joy. And then along with joy comes peace. To live in a world, regardless of the conflict that we see external, even in the midst of the conflict, there ought to be also an opportunity to have peace, to know that your service or your activity or your input is valued, and that we value every individual. And I can go on with long-suffering and going down the list, but I won't.
Let me interrupt for just a second and say that for those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Elizabeth Smith, talking with George Johnson, Jr., pastor of St. Paul AME Church and retired Waco assistant city manager. I want to pick back up where I interrupted you, because you were talking about positive qualities that a leader has. But I think sometimes there are those qualities that maybe propel a person to leadership but are dangerous or hazardous or at least a two-edged sword.
I still think that's a positive, at least in my perspective. And we'd call it long-suffering or patience or a willingness to do for others and to make oneself not the the priority. Mm-hmm. And I know that goes against our culture in some ways, and it goes against our Western thought, but the true leader somehow transcends even those kind our thinking, and it comes out in someone who really cares about others and who is willing to do and to interact in a way that would be beneficial to more than him or herself.
Seems like one of the most important examples a leader provides has to do with dealing with humans' imperfections. And it seems like ministers are all over the place.
You're right in my alley now, I guess.
Some chastise from the pulpit. Some call individuals before a group to be held accountable. Others leave judgment to God. What's your practice and why?
Well, I mean, my practice is very simple, I think. And that is I try to adhere to the tenets of the faith of the Word of God, the written Word of God. And therefore, I don't think it's mine to judge others. I have my opinions. I have my, and obviously we all do, but it doesn't supersede what I believe. And even if sometimes that belief cannot be articulated in a way that persons can understand it as far as logic, but it still supersedes for me my judgment. And therefore, I have to treat even the likable as well as the unlikables the same.
What are some of your sweetest memories of your work with the church?
Some of my sweetest memories. I think this is a season of currently. I would say some of my fondest memories would probably be in the military. And just the idea of open space, no pretense, no anything other than soldiers and chaplain, and that's just fun. The guys having me down in a tank or up on top of a mountain with scouts, that was fun. But I guess the sweetest would be right now in this season of senior, and I am senior. And the opportunity to really sit back and one of my favorite theologians is Gustavo Gutierrez, and his way of doing religion was really different rather than what we normally would learn as Methodists. He would say, reflect, take action, and reflect on the action. And I get to do that now. I get to reflect, think about what I'm about to do, what I feel is the important thing to do. And then I get to take that action and then reflect on that action. And there were times when the children were growing up and you are tri-vocational, you didn't get a lot of reflection time.
Yeah.
So this is a good season for me.
That's great. Okay, speaking of young people, there are, even in our community, people who don't know much about Paul Quinn College, particularly the younger generation. So talk a little bit about the college.
I'd love to. Paul Quinn was here in Waco for a long time, and it's now 100 and I don't want to misquote, I think 143 years old, and much of that was here in Waco. It moved from Austin to Waco. It stayed here, and in fact, during its growing period, it was in the basement of the church that I now pastor. Oftentimes, the pastors at Paul Quinn, the pastors at St. Paul would also be the president of Paul Quinn.
I never knew that.
That was just, again, that bivocational commitment. As it grew, and the requirement obviously required professional, dedicated leaders to take that responsibility of education, Paul Quinn was also always, until just the last 5 years, it's the chairman of the board of the Paul Quinn College Board of Trustees, the bishop, the presiding prelate of the district. That isn't the case now. We have seen the light. We recognize that we need the support of all of our community partners. Paul Quinn serves an excellent opportunity and provides an excellent opportunity for children, for young people who may not have gotten an opportunity to go to other schools. I think it continues to provide the gap. It picks those persons up who would have perhaps fallen in the gap, would not have been given any sort of opportunity to go to a college because they probably wouldn't have qualified by the current standards. However, given that opportunity and finishing their undergraduate degree, they have gone on to do graduate work in all kinds of institutions that are celebrated throughout the United States.
I want to get back to that in just a second, but right now I want to remind you, you're listening to the Central Texas Leadership Series on your public radio station, KWBU, celebrating 15 years in the heart of Texas. I'm Elizabeth Smith, visiting with my friend George Johnson, Jr. Okay, you were talking about Paul Quinn, and that's really what brought you to Waco, isn't it?
And not only me, but I would say several, if not more than that, persons of color came to this community and chose to stay in this community because of the Paul Quinn being the vehicle that introduced and invited.
And you made the choice to stay here.
My wife and I made the choice to stay. We had lived in Dallas. We had gone to lived on Marking Bird and our kids going to Highland Park school system. And we knew that we wanted to be in a community where we could rear our kids and grow as the community has grown. We have grown, and so have our kids in the community. Mm-hmm. So that was a intentional choice of ours.
So you came here. Paul Quinn moved to Dallas. You chose to stay, and you ended up at City Hall. Talk about that.
Again, you know, some say providential or accidental. I'm not sure, but I met some really wonderful people when I served as Dean of Students at Paul Quinn College. Some of the persons, just to name a few, Mr. B. Rappaport was on the board, Mr. Monty Hulse, Mr. Lyndon Olson Jr., and many, many others served, Mr. Roundtree before my time, senior, and several others who served on the Paul Quinn board. And through those relationships, when it came time for Paul Quinn to make that decision, my wife and I made the decision to stay here, those persons were very instrumental in counseling me towards a new career and opportunities here in Waco.
Well, I think our community certainly benefited from that, and I think you did a wonderful job as an assistant city manager, and it was an honor to be able to work with you. We got into all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to think most of it was good for the community.
Very good.
I hope you won't be offended when I say you've made some mistakes. I have no idea what they might be, but we all have situations we wished we'd handled differently. Are there any lessons learned that you might share?
Yes. In each of my tri-vocational opportunities, I felt that there were times that timing was important. For instance, in the military, I stayed in Waco where I should have gone to another unit because I loved being home.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it slowed my promotional opportunities in the military, which was by choice.
Mm-hmm.
In the church, there are often times you sometimes think that perhaps you should have gone full-time ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's a mistake. However, that's a decision that I debate often.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes, you know, there are these decisions, and depending on how you look at it, it's a win-win or it's a win-lose. And maybe the important thing is just being comfortable with your decision.
Right.
That the values you chose to go with were the ones that have the highest priority in your life.
Well, and that's true. And that was even the opportunity to work in government rather than in the private sector, because there were opportunities, I thought, to even go towards an insurance field.
Mm-hmm.
But when I had the wonderful opportunity to sit down with a seasoned individual who I consider a mentor and really good friend, and he asked, what are your priorities and where do you feel? And I said, I want to do something that complemented ministry. And so government to me, even though you're not the person that's being complimented, you are working for citizens, you're working to further the quality of life for individuals in community. And that to me was in itself a blessing and a reward.
I cherish your saying that because I feel like I was the beneficiary of your leadership in so many regards. So how can those of us who want to support our leaders in the difficult decisions they're called to make?
There has to be a core value, or at least that which supersedes even your values. And for me, I can't hold my leaders any, I can't hold them accountable if I'm not holding myself accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't hold myself accountable if it's only my standards and mm-hmm. my preferences mm-hmm. that are adhered to. Mm-hmm. And so regardless of ethnicity, denominational stuff, or even political preferences, there ought to be a common standard that we can say, these are values, regardless of who you are,
mm-hmm.
you can say, if I do these things, then whether people agree or disagree, it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the standard I think leadership has to agree on. And we may not agree on the specific nuances of each of that kind of thinking,
right.
but we can agree that there are some issues. I mean, there are some ideas that are bigger than we are,
mm-hmm.
and we ought to strive to. And there are opportunities for us to help people in general, help society in specific,
mm-hmm.
without it necessarily always having to benefit me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's nothing wrong for you to benefit, because every time society improves, it benefits all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I maybe that was pretty general, but.
No, I think that was great. I think you're right. I mean, sometimes we support people with respect even when we don't necessarily agree with the specific mm-hmm. issue. In closing, do you have any words of wisdom for aspiring leaders?
I don't know if there are words of wisdom, but I just believe that in this community, what I found to be a core value, that there are, regardless of, again, whatever the differences might be, there are opportunities for us to, what I would consider, there are times when you just have it and sometimes you don't. it was the opportunity for what I would call shared values are values that we know, goodwill.
Yeah.
In this community.
Yeah.
I'm never amazed at just people doing some great stuff in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And from regardless of who it might be, whether it's grassroots or if it's the leadership, elected leadership, or whomever it might be, a private sector, because there is an enormous amount of goodwill in this community. And I don't think that whether it's in community or anywhere else, much gets done without goodwill.
I totally agree with you. And it's one of the delights of living here, that we have an environment in which we can collaborate. Thank you, George, for sharing your experience and insights. Our community is a better place thanks to your leadership.
Thank you for being so kind in the interview. Thanks, Elizabeth.